Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, the contemptuous way in which you spoke of gluttony as a means of catching souls in your last letter shows only your ignorance. One of the great achievements of the last 100 years has been to deaden the human conscience on that subject, so that by now you will hardly find a sermon preached or a conscience troubled about it in the whole length and breadth of Europe. This has largely been effected by concentrating all our efforts on gluttony of delicacy, not gluttony of excess. Your patient's mother, as I learned from the dossier, and you might have learned from Glubo's, is a good example. She would be astonished, one day I hope will be, to learn that her whole life is enslaved to this kind of sensuality, which is quite concealed from her by the fact that the quantities involved are small. But what do quantities matter, provided we can use a human belly and palate to produce querulousness, impatience, uncharitableness, and self-concern? Glubo's has this old woman well in hand. She is a positive terror to hostesses and servants. She is always turning from what she's been offered to say, with a demure little sigh and a smile, "Oh, please, please, all I want is a cup of tea weak, but not too weak, and the teeniest, weeniest bit of really crisp toast, you see?" Because what she wants is smaller and less costly than what has been set before her, she never recognizes as gluttony her determination to get what she wants, however troublesome it may be to others. At the very moment of indulging her appetite, she believes that she is practicing temperance. In a crowded restaurant, she gives a little scream at the plate which some overworked waitress has set before and says, Oh, that's far, far too much. Take it away and bring me about a quarter of it." If challenged, she would say she was doing this to avoid waste. In reality, she does it because the particular shade of delicacy to which we have enslaved her is offended by the sight of more food than she happens to want. The real value of the quiet, unobtrusive work which Glubo's has been doing for years on this old woman can be gauged by the way in which her belly now dominates her whole life. The woman is in what may be called the all-I-want state of mind. All she wants is a cup of tea properly made, or an egg properly boiled, or a slice of bread properly toasted. But she never finds any servant or any friend who can do these simple things properly, because her properly conceals an insatiable demand for the exact and almost impossible palatal pleasures which she imagines she remembers from the past, a past described by her as the days when you could get good servants, but known to us as the days when her senses were more easily pleased and she had pleasures of other kinds which made her less dependent on those of the table. Meanwhile, the daily disappointment produces daily ill temper. Cooks give notice and friendships are cooled. If ever the enemy introduces into her mind a faint suspicion that she is too interested in food, Glubo's counters it by suggesting to her that she doesn't mind what she eats herself, but does like to have things nice for her boy. In fact, of course, her greed has been one of the chief sources of his domestic discomfort for many years. Now, Your patient is his mother's son. While working your hardest, quite rightly on other fronts, you must not neglect a little quiet infiltration in respect of gluttony. Being a male, he is not so likely to be caught by the all-I-want camouflage. Males are best turned into gluttons with the help of their vanity. They ought to be made to think themselves very knowing about food, to pique themselves on having found the only restaurant in the town where steaks are really properly cooked. What begins as vanity can then be gradually turned into habit. But however you approach it, the great thing is to bring him into the state in which the denial of any one indulgence, it matters not which, champagne or tea, Sol Colbert or cigarettes, puts him out, for then his charity, justice and obedience are all at your mercy. Mere excess in food is much less valuable than delicacy. Its chief use is as a kind of artillery preparation for attacks on chastity. On that, as on every other subject, keep your man in a condition of false spirituality. Never let him notice the medical aspect. Keep him wondering what pride or lack of faith has delivered him into your hands, when a simple inquiry into what he's been eating or drinking for the last 24 hours would show him whence your ammunition comes, and thus enable him by a very little abstinence to imperil your lines of communication. If he must think of the medical side of chastity, feed him the grand lie which we have made the English humans believe, that physical exercise in excess and consequent fatigue are specially favourable to this virtue. How they can believe this in face of the notorious lustfulness of sailors and soldiers may well be asked. But we use the schoolmasters to put the story about. Men who were really interested in chastity as an excuse for games, and therefore recommended games as an aid to chastity. But this whole business is too large to deal with at the tail end of a letter. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
Screwtape Letters, podcast confronting evil in our time, letter 17. Galen, this one talks... on the surface level, you could listen to it and go, wow, okay, he talks about gluttony and chastity. It's maybe 75% about gluttony, then all of a sudden chastity. You could sit there scratching your head after that. But, you know, when you start to unpack this and start to think it through and start to think of the people that you know and that you've met, who being nourished by food and the way they relate to food has an effect on the rest of their life.
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
for sure.
You know, I think we all have with kids, right? You know, you're like, oh, my kid's a picky eater. Now, why would that be a bad thing? Because we know that it comes with other issues.
With other desires, inclinations, and all those things. The way you treat your appetite is the way you control cravings, control impulse, dopamine hits. You know, eating sugary foods is the same dopamine hit that comes from all kinds of other things, many of them bad. It's controlling the desires and the impulses rather than having those desires and impulses
right.
Control you. So talking about food is really one of the core issues that relates to a whole lot of aspects of the human experience, and he unpacks it in the form of a discussion on gluttony.
Because that's all of us eat. Everyone has to eat
right.
to survive.
Right.
And you have to feed your body to keep your body going. And you have to feed your soul with the word to keep your walk with Jesus going. Now, we looked up the definition of gluttony just to be exact. Because most people think it is always about eating in excess.
Right.
But if you read it, it's about habitual greed or an excess in eating.
Mm-hmm.
So he's covering it more from the habitual greed side of things, because he goes in to talk about, and this area is focused on Glubos, who is the demon who's controlling the mother.
Yeah, the mother's.
And he's doing a great job.
Right.
Like, Screwtape's loving the job that he's doing. Yeah. He's trying to tell Wormwood, you need to like follow more in the footsteps of Glubos, because he outflanks her every time that we think that the enemy, being God, is actually influencing her life.
And I like the way he takes this, though, because as he tackles gluttony, he really kind of changes and challenges our thinking. We naturally think in terms of excess,
yep,
someone who eats too much, but then he talk about gluttony of delicacy. So it's that greed or that, you know, insisting on having the exact type of food in the exact right way, prepared exactly the way I like it prepared type of thing, prepared properly, as Glubos's patient, yeah, says. And it's unpacking that delicacy, that need to have what I want exactly the way I want it.
When I want it, right. Yeah.
In the most, kind of base and superficial sense, which is to taste it, you know, when we're eating, how do we have what suits our taste immediately every time?
It's interesting because you think about this and people you know, again, who are picky eaters, and you look at the mom in this story, and she's selfish, she's arrogant, there's very few virtues in her gluttony.
Mm.
As they say, you know, Screwtape even points out some overworked servant,
mm-hmm,
or there's a cook will hand his notice in and leave, and it'll break up relationships with others. And it's destructive.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love the way he's gone into this, that it isn't just, oh, she's an overeating mama who just wants. But she does want.
Right.
But the thing's exactly her way.
Right. She doesn't want a whole bunch of it. In fact, she even sends it back, but she wants it exactly just right. And it's almost created an idol of food. I believe God has built beautiful things into the created order.
Yep.
That it's for us to discover and unpack. And I believe as we create and unpack, discover, and enjoy the beauty of the earth and all the things that God's created, we're glorifying Him. And one of those things, I think, is taste. Fine wine, a perfectly good,
yeah,
steak. I think that's enjoying God's creation. But I think it also becomes an idol. And I think it was something that was even in the culture. As I was reading this, I kept thinking of Downton Abbey.
Yeah. That type of
pretentious
class,
yeah,
system.
You know, and it's, yeah, just like, you know, and again, I'm not the revolutionary guy in Downton Abbey. But it's just that pretentious haughtiness of just like absolutely nitpicking over every little aspect of the meal. Different, not what you would think of as demonic, but
no,
having to appeal to the senses that much.
That's what's the brilliance of this, is because it's going to a place where I think it explains when you have someone in your world who is always awkward at a restaurant. They're always sending things back. They're always, this isn't done the way I really wanted it.
Mm.
It's destructive. And they might say, well, I just want things done my way. But you know what? The world doesn't work where everything has to be done your way. And also, you're giving no grace whatsoever to the servers, to the cook,
right,
to the other people. Now, there's a difference between, again, terrible and it was just a little bit too big,
right,
for me, or a little bit too that, or I don't want people thinking this, or, you know, there's too much dressing on it. That sort of person isn't the sort of person who is going to, within a community, be a net positive to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a selfish and tawdry characteristic for someone to have. But I don't think people see it like that, because I think they just see it as like, well, look, I'm paying. I just want it the way I want it.
Right. But I think the demonic is always going to get us distracted to the point where we're trying to take small things that really don't matter and make them the big things.
Right.
In the last episode, he's trying to get his patient to do this in matters of the church. Take the small things that don't matter and be a critic and then lose the forest through the trees. And again, here, there's nothing wrong with enjoying a good meal. But first of all, kind of the two things. Take the littlest nitpicky things, like, and make it this big thing that your life ends up revolving around. Get over it. Move on with your life. And secondly, you're also just being selfish at some point.
No, absolutely. Like he says in there, he says she thinks she's practicing temperance. right. by the way she does it.
Right.
Which she isn't. And in a lot of ways, you know, he also says that she sends it back, wants a smaller portion because she doesn't want to be wasteful. But the reality is, as we all know, she's actually being more wasteful because she's sending the food back.
Right.
She's getting most of it thrown away. They don't like give it to someone else.
But she probably more than anything likes how she presents herself I don't need that much. You know, she's just right. really keeping up appearances.
Like, oh, no,
again,
I
with the pretense. I mean, I just all I can see is.
Which, you know, is another great British show.
That is, isn't it? Keeping up appearances. Shout out to my aunt for watching the British show.
Yeah, right, yeah. And you know, and Screwtape says her belly dominates her whole life. And
right.
I think this is what we're talking about when we're talking about demonic attacks. Is it can be through sex, it can be through anger, it can be through your belly,
right.
it can be through multitude of different things. And this is what I think the brilliance of what C.S. Lewis has done through the Screwtape Letters is illuminating those things.
The simple little things that are in everyday life.
That no one would think of.
Right.
That they go, no, you guys are crazy talking about that. But then you start to think and go, huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That a fixation on different things can actually be detrimental to one having a walk with faith, having a community, having a church community, because again, it ties into, we've used the word selfishness, greed, pride, all these different things that are within there.
I think it's also one of the big themes in terms of being a Christian and walking with Jesus is to constantly take our desires and impulses and pull them into order and pull them into control. I say either your flesh, whether it's sexual impulses or diet or laziness or all those things, either your flesh has control over you or you have control over your flesh.
Right.
And we're supposed to be controlled by the Spirit. We're supposed to be people who are under control so that everything is directed for the purposes of God in our lives. And that's being a disciple of Jesus even has the word discipline in it. And it's very easy for some of the sillier, smaller things in life that we might easily dismiss. Those things can become strongholds, can slowly end up having control over us rather than us having control over them.
So at this point in the podcast, going to stop for a second and just let everyone know we are not sitting here telling you to don't have joys in life, don't have pleasures in life, you know, don't fall into this trap, just be like in the word all the time, because we're not. There's a phrase in there that he says, pleasures of other kinds stop the focus on gluttony. C.S. Lewis points out that Screwtape says if she's focused and has pleasure in many different things, she's not going to focus on the one thing. And mm-hmm. and then get over,
mm-hmm.
right? But he also says within there, and it reminded me of something that within Jewish culture, they actually say one of the questions God asks you when you get to heaven is, have you partaken in all the good things I laid out for you?
Hmm.
And I may paraphrase it wrongly. It's not just good, but it's virtuous, right? It's not just like, hey, do you go skydiving?
Right.
You know, it's like, or, you know, just, you know, have sex with 50 different people because that felt good. It isn't that kind of good. It's as in, what's the right word?
Did you discover all of the good things that I installed, hidden in creation?
God's good things,
yeah.
right?
God's
not
good
not
thing.
Just not just things that you felt were good.
Right.
Right. But and I think that's good. It's having that balance of within your life, and like he's talking about the mom being a glutton, but we're also got to think in here that maybe that's her one thing, and that's why it's so mm-hmm. overarching with her,
mm-hmm.
that she doesn't have other joys to spread out and therefore not be so focused and not so deep in one area.
Right. Here's another thought, and maybe this will take us into the kind of the next part of the chapter. Can having that one thing that just kind of gets you in this, for the woman, it was just, she's just got her, you know, just how she is on her, the way she needs her food. So she's kind of a little bit of a glutton in a way that we wouldn't typically think, but can that be opening a door for other types of sin and other type of strongholds? As this woman now has a stronghold in her life, can one end up laying the foundation or open a door for other things?
See, I read it as he said, it's more of a case of the focus on the ones a really bad place to be. That it, let's say you had three things that you were maybe lukewarm with, mm-hmm. as in whether it was greed, gluttony, or whatever. That's a better place to be than having one that you're just in deep with. That's the way I saw that coming across, because I think he points out that, like, that can just... The demonic can control you more if you're that deep into that situation. Mm-hmm. So that's what he talks about there. But then the pivot is towards the sun. And they say, and Screwtape says, it's different for men. And they actually use gluttony, what does he say, as an artillery use for attacks on chastity. Which is a weird pivot.
It's a very weird pivot. It's a very weird pivot. Be honest, I had to read that long paragraph like four times to really try to wrap my head around it. Well, first of all, and he does say it is very different for men than it is for women. He talks about the fact that there seems to be even a little bit of status behind it for men, and men know all the places in town where the steaks are really properly cooked. And I think you see that in the world today. You know, we're in Scottsdale right now, Old Town Scottsdale, right down the street. There is this idolatry of going to the right restaurant and experiencing all the right things and the nicest foods and all that stuff. So I think you see that dynamic. And again, it's not being able to appreciate good things. I think God wants us to do that, but not allow them to become vices and strongholds in our lives.
Yeah. But I love the way he says an artillery use, because it's almost like, you know, within the military, the artillery is there to soften the battlefield up.
Mm-hmm.
Fire in as many shells as you can, get everyone, like, you know, running for cover and not able to return fire and protect their line. And I wonder the connection that he's making here between chastity, and I think it's chastity is obviously a bigger sin. Because if something like gluttony is used, as he says, as that artillery use for softening the battlefield for chastity or chastity issues, then, okay, that starts to make sense. But I would think it's not just gluttony. There's probably many of the others that lead up to that. And as we know, I think if you came home and said, honey, I've got something to tell you, I've been having an affair, or... I'm really a picky eater.
Which one's going to devastate your marriage more?
Right. Yeah. You know, and so we know that because of those human relationships, that the idea of chastity, especially within marriage, is going to be the bigger issue.
Right.
The much bigger issue.
But that's where I even see he's laying the groundwork. And again, gluttony, who even talks about it, it's a small sin. But I think it does lay the groundwork and open up the door for more serious sins. Because ultimately, giving into gluttony is saying, I have a craving and a desire for something and I'm going to pursue it.
Right.
And not in excess, necessarily. But in I'm going to spend a lot of money because I want just the nicest steaks, or I just want that, or I'm this picky thing. But it's when I have a desire, I need to indulge it. When I have a desire, I constantly need to indulge it. He says in the mother, she doesn't recognize her gluttony as her determination to get what she wants. So apply that same. It's the relationship with me and my desires. If I constantly give in, how does that relate to sexual desires?
Right.
And that's where the two are really, really related, because ultimately it's what do you do with the things that you crave?
I think you're right. And I think that's why he points to this, because I think he knows that maybe in a lot of ways, gluttony and chastity are two ends of the temptation spectrum.
Right.
One will devastate you, where the other one will have a deleterious effect on your mm-hmm. on your life. And so, interestingly, back to C.S. Lewis, or back to the Screwtape Letters actual words within here, it's 1940. The feminist movement is in the early days. You've had the suffragettes of the teens, right? The 19-teens.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got wartime. All the men are going over to war. And you've got American troops turning up in England. You've got troops from other countries turned up in England, and they're being spread around villages around and cities around England. And back then, they felt in wartime, the idea of staying honorable within a relationship was diluted because you may never see your husband again. The boyfriend you thought you had may never end up becoming your husband later on in life. And so I think that the sexual issue was a bigger deal then as well, as in there were more, all of a sudden war broke out and there were more women having sex with men outside of a marriage.
Sure.
Women were having sex with soldiers, the American soldiers that come over, and like that's very well documented over there. And you've also got this feminist movement that's saying, we empower women. You know, you don't have to, you know, wait for the 60s. I think this was happening in the 40s as well. And so maybe C.S. Lewis is going down that road because he understood the issue with chastity.
Right.
And as I say, a walk with Christ. It's mentioned many times in Scripture that you basically sex is for a marriage. Others would just read it and take bits out of context, but it's pretty clear that that's where Scripture goes.
But he's seeing the cultural relevance of hitting this topic.
I think so.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Too bad we're not able to relate that to today because I'm as, you know. Oh, that doesn't apply to the world today.
That horse is bolted the same in the biggest way. But one thing's very interesting, and this is the colourful C.S. Lewis of the 1940s, that he notes that, or Screwtape notes, that physical exercise in excess and fatigue will prevent people failing chastity. And it's like, what? And you can almost imagine, like, a public service announcement, right? Stay true to God. You know, run a mile
a day.
Fall into fail chastity in that manner. But he then also talks about the soldiers and sailors line, which I think is great.
Yeah, he says, I don't know why they still think that if they got the notorious lustfulness of the soldiers and sailors.
Right. it's like, again, to what I was saying about the war thing. Because,
right.
You know, obviously rape is huge within war and always has been. And it's awful. But then when you've got a situation where, you know, that lack of chastity is, or chastity is no longer seen as a virtue, you know, it actually ends up working in the demonic's favor in breaking down relationships, breaking down the value of a marriage, breaking down the value of so many other associated things as well.
Right. And it all starts with the ability to have a healthy relationship with my desires, with my impulses, and direct them really the way I believe the Word of God and the Lord is telling me to direct them. And it starts with the tiniest bites of a morsel. It starts with the basic senses, and really it's that same desire with your relationships that impacts your pursuit of all areas of sensuality. And that's something that, again, we're supposed to be, I believe as Christians, we're called to pull those things into control and direct them in a good and healthy way. But the natural impulse of the flesh and being a human and also exploited by the demonic is going to let those things run rampant. Eat, drink, be merry. No, direct those things in the healthy, in a healthy way.
So I think as a takeaway, I think you probably put it in just brilliant terms then. I think people really have just got to watch their impulses. Think about ramifications of actions in all things, whether it's the way you treat someone in a restaurant, the way you treat someone at dinner, the way you talk to people, or like, as you said, like it's the ramifications of sex outside of marriage, there's probably way more negatives to it than
people realize.
Yeah, 100%.
You
know, we're not perfect, but I think it's something that you've got to think through and just be really clear with.
Yeah.
So that's Screwtape Letters, letter 17. Confronting Evil in Our Time, and we'll see you again next time.